chicken industry has expanded because during World War II, it was one of the few meats that was not rationed. And there's been advocates. National Broiler Council was helping the companies with interactions with the government to get the fair trade and things like that. And then that was in 1954. And then the U.S. Poultry and Egg came about 1994, and they've done a lot for the poultry industry, also helping students and people like that find jobs. And every year they have the International Poultry Exhibition where they have maybe, I think last one had 32,000 people, 1,800 exhibitors. And they basically tell the rest of the world how poultry is going on, so.
We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible.
AccuGut C.1 is a proven solution for your coccidiosis toolbox. Give those traditional tools a break and rotate to AccuGut C.1. Visit dsm-firmenich.com/AccuGut to learn more. AB Vista, intelligent nutritional solutions to boost poultry health and performance. Natural Biologics is looking deeper to find the natural solutions to your poultry health challenges. Nexus, powered by SAM, where science meets performance. Sid Lines, an Ecolab company, AV Prime program offers a broad range of cleaning and disinfection solutions combined with tailored advice to improve hygiene on your farm or hatchery.
Welcome to the Poultry Podcast Show. I am Dr. Elizabeth Bobeck, and today I'm here with Dr. Joe Giovroni. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
We've had some good chats in the past and talked about topics, but today I want to talk to you about the history of the broiler industry in the United States. I think you're in a great position to talk about some of these things, and I love hearing real history from those who have lived it. So let's jump right in. So in terms of the broiler industry, a lot of our listeners are in the industry. Some of them might be new or exploring. The majority of the industry right now is kind of in the South and the Southeastern U.S. So it's, I know that it started in different regions. Maybe can you kind of talk to me and tell us about the history of kind of the move from other regions and consolidation down in the Southeast?
Okay, before I determine or show you why and how it got there, it all started in 1923 with a person by the name of Cecilia Steele in Sussex, Delaware. She ordered 50 chickens and ended up with 500. And so she took the initiative, put the money into it, it worked hard. And 4 years later, she had 10,000. And if you go to that area, you'll see that there's a sign there indicated it's on the historical home sites. And actually, the initial farm was there. And it stayed in that area for a while because you have to realize in the 1900s, the majority of the population lived between Boston and maybe Richmond. It's before we had migration in cars and trains to move people throughout the rest of the U.S. So Delmarva still is an important area of poultry, especially with Purdue and a number of other places. And that area is pretty much center in the Northeast. So that's why I expanded. But eventually it moved to the Southeast for a number of reasons. One is that there was a fair amount of cheap land, cheap labor, good resources. It was close to the grain belt, you know, in the Midwest, and they could bring the grain in through barges or through railroads. And so also that's interesting. There, between North Carolina and Arkansas, there's fairly mountainous and there's foothills there. And it turned out that that was a really good place to grow chickens because it wasn't too hot and it wasn't too cold. And also that land is fairly rocky, so it was not really good for producing any kind of row crops. So it just worked out really well. And it kind of started with this guy named John Tyson. In the 30s, he started selling chickens out of his van little chicks and then processed chickens. And he got so big that all of a sudden he became integrated. We'll talk about that later. Is he built a feed mill, a processing plant, farms. And that company is really the first integrated sustainable country because now our company, because now the Tyson company has passed to Don Tyson and now on to John Tyson Jr. Tyson has really expanded internationally. They produce both fresh and frozen. You can get all kinds of different frozen food that where they've added the vegetables. They grow turkeys, chickens, swine, pigs, so beef. I mean, it's incredible. And they've done a really good job of getting the industry started. And there's one other company that I'll talk about before we move on. There's this company in 1936, an individual by the name of Brooks. He founded a cooperative where farmers could send chickens and have them processed. And that started out as the Georgia Farmers Cooperative and then turned into Goldkist. Goldkist was around for about 20, 30 years, and it expanded and it became second to Tyson. Eventually in 2005, it was bought out by Pilgrim. So Tyson's and Pilgrim's are now the largest companies. There's a couple other companies, Koch, Wayne Anderson. If you look at those and you look at Purdue, that'd probably be 50 or 60% of the broiler industry. And then if you go out to California, there's companies like Forest Ingrams. And so now all the companies in the U.S. produce about 9 billion per year chickens, and they for a total of 60 billion pounds. And another reason the chicken industry has expanded because during World War II, it was one of the few meats that was not rationed. And there's been advocates. The National Broiler Council was helping the companies with interactions with the government to get the fair trade and things like that. And then that was in 1954. And then U.S. Poultry and Egg came about 1994, and they've done a lot for the poultry industry, also helping students and people like that find jobs. And every year they have the International Poultry Exhibition where they have maybe, I think the last one had 32,000 people, 1,800 exhibitors. And they basically tell the rest of the world how poultry is going on. So that was what I had to say about that history.
Yeah, I did not realize that poultry were not rationed around the wartime. That's so interesting.
Yeah. See, this would be after World War I and then during World War II. And I'm not sure exactly the way that reason why that was, but it certainly helped the poultry industry expand over the other red meats.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Also, I just think it's interesting that, you know, certain religions might have rules or thought about different sorts of meats and products, but poultry just kind of lies outside of all of that. So I wonder if that had to do with any of it. I don't know.
I'm sure it had a lot to do with that. And no matter where you go, whether Islam or Hebrew or pretty much all of them that allow meat will allow poultry. And there's so many ways to cook chicken, frying, baking, broiling, stir frying, It's just incredible, the grilling and other meats you may not be able to do that with. So it was readily available. It's a fairly, it's less expensive than the other red meats. So that's better feed conversion, things of that nature.
Boehringer Ingelheim develops poultry vaccines of unparalleled quality. With a focus on prevention and control across a wide range of diseases, we deliver unique, sustainable solutions for broilers, layers, breeders, and turkeys. Our veterinary network brings unsurpassed knowledge and experience, helping producers make smart, innovative, science-driven decisions to improve bird health and performance. For more information, visit PoultryHealthUSA.com.
So what can you tell us about the role of vertical integration, you know, in the last 100 years or so? Our farms today look so much different than the first ones, but
well, we get the bad rap of basically individuals saying it's factory farming. Well, the fact is not. It's grown by individuals that are farmers, that hardworking people, and it's not a factory. So vertical integration is probably the most important thing that made the poultry sustainable. Because basically what you have is these large companies that I talked about, Pilgrim's, Tyson, all those, and many. There's about 50 companies which are fairly well integrated. And basically you have that company in the center. And they provide the breeder chicks. They provide the hatchery, they provide the feed mill, the processing plant, and most of those companies now are so large that they're traded on the New York Stock Exchange. They're not going out of business, and they provide contracts to the farmers. And so the farmers are individuals that the mom and pop people that raise the chickens on their farm. A farmer owns the real estate, it owns the houses, it provides the utilities, but it doesn't own the chickens and it doesn't own the feed. The farmers then have a contract where they grow chickens a certain amount of time, they produce a number of pounds, and they are basically, regardless of how the chickens do, they are then, they're guaranteed income. So it's not like growing grain or some disaster that comes along. And around that are allied industry. Allied industry are things like the farmers that produce the grain. They'd be also things companies like the pharmaceutical companies, fast food, the groceries, people that provide the various grain feed additives. Also the basic breeders. There's two basic breeders. Well, there's a number of basic breeders, but Avigen and Cobb are produced most of it. They have the pedigree, the great-great-grandparents to provide those breeder chicks to the integrator. And it all goes around in a circle, and it allows the companies to stay in business, whereas if they went in on their own, they may not.
Yeah, there's a lot of moving parts, including probably the most important is having a place to take the birds to process and then distribute. I think that's probably been the toughest.
No question.
For smaller companies.
Processing plants are really tens, 20 millions of dollars.
Yeah.
And require maybe 1,000 laborers. So a farmer obviously couldn't do that.
Yeah. So what can you tell me about the efficiency of the bird? You mentioned it earlier, and we all know that even within the last 20 years, man, those birds sure changed, got more efficient. But I mean, from really the start of the industry till now, that's been a huge success story.
No question about it. It's interesting that it all started in 1946 when a group of farmers, small companies, got together and they had this contest, and they took the top birds. First off, they grew these chickens out, gave them feed, and the ones with the best feed conversion, best livability, were then chosen. Became the breeding stock that the companies like, started out with companies like Van Tress and R-Breakers, which are mainly in the Northeast. But then eventually those companies were consolidated with Cobb, Avigen, and there's still a few that are around there. And it was a combination. Genetics is certainly important, that having chickens that have a better weight gain, feed conversion, livability. But equally important to that was nutrition, because as the genetics change, the nutrition has to change. And if they're not, then they won't get the pure efficiency. And most of the nutritionists have PhDs that they graduated certain universities, and they have to feed formulate based on what's out there and least cost, what grains are out there, and they have to add other things like probiotics, prebiotics, enzymes, and all that stuff. So that was important and continuously changes. Corn soy is still a main diet, but you have to add the vitamins and minerals are going to have to change to support the growing birds. Vet science is certainly important. Health. As the birds grow faster and bigger, they could develop muscular skeletal system problems, cardiovascular problems. So the vets have to stay on top of that. And also moving to antibiotic free and how that's originated. The veterinarians have to go and they work each of these integrators probably have 2, 3, 4 veterinarians at work, depending on where they are in the U.S. And they will visit farms whenever the farmers or the complex manager, those individuals determine that they're diseases. So they have to go in there and give their recommendations. Diagnostic labs, pharmaceutical labs, the vaccines have changed so much that we've seen in the past where they're having molecular vaccines now. The diagnostic tests have become more molecular. When they're diseases, they're doing whole genome sequencing and things like that. So this is really incredible. Then you have the environmental control. When you grow bigger birds, you have to change the equipment. You have to change the houses. You have to change the ventilation. And the housing is incredible now. They're mainly open spanned anywhere from 40 to about 60 feet wide and 400 to 600 feet long, actually 3 football lengths, and they can have up to 50,000 birds in there. They're pretty much everything's computerized. The feeding, watering, the air ventilation, and it's controlled mainly a lot by computers so that it goes on so that individuals can have other jobs and have this other work done. It takes out a lot of the manpower, and manpower is a big problem in the industry right now, finding the individuals to get that work done. So it's been a combination of a lot of different things. They all have to change. Again, it's this circular pattern to get to where we are now. And a chicken, this is kind of interesting. Back in 1970, it took 12 weeks to get a 3.5-pound chicken with a feed conversion of about 3, a carcass yield of 61%, and mortality about 10%. 2025, you can get a 6.5-pound bird in 45 days with a feed conversion of 1.8, 77% carcass yield, and about 3.5% mortality. So this is all contributed to where we are today. So the consumer can get what they want at a price they can afford. And it's incredible that we've made, people ask me, how far can we go with body weight feed conversion? Well, the geneticists say there's no limit to it, but the rest of it is obviously there's going to be problems whenever you get bigger birds. It's going to have to change all the equipment in the processing plant. You start putting birds in there as big as turkeys, everything has to be taken out and replaced. You could have problems with breeders. You may end up having to go to artificial insemination. So the industry has gone pretty far. It's hard to know how much further they can go because, you have things like woody breast and tibial dyschondroplasia and things like that. But it's a bright future is the way I look at it.
Well, I think the advances in all of those areas have just been like the most insane success story. I mean, we just don't see some of those same changes in the other species, and maybe it's not possible without the integration that the poultry industry has. But I just think the improvements are so cool, especially everybody coming together.
It is. You feed mill, these feed mills can produce 20,000 tons of feed per week. The processing plant can process 200,000 birds in a day. It's just unbelievable. They keep getting bigger and bigger. We've had to go to more automation, computers, robots, because again, there's been a dearth of labor. And you go in a processing plant and 50% of the people there are immigrants. And we certainly don't want to lose them. And actually we need more.
Yeah, exactly.
We need people that will work for $15 an hour.
So how do you think sustainability in the industry has changed over time? I'm sure there was kind of different definitions in the past and maybe the goals were met. So then they got to think about new standards, right? So what do you think about the change in sustainability over time?
Yeah. And as I said before, a lot of people say that it's mainly profitability and being able to pass it down generations. And I think that works for farmers definitely. If you're into it. If you want your children's to get in it, grandchildren, that's sustainable. But it's more than that. Sustainability really means the use of less resources, produce less greenhouse gases. So right now, the industry, as opposed to what it was in 1965, it uses 75% less resources to get the chicken to where we want it to go, which means less farms, less feed, less water, less litter, a lower carbon footprint. In that time over since 1965, the industry has produced 36% greenhouse gases. And that's incredible. It's mainly ammonia, but it could be carbon monoxide, other things. So they become environmental stewards. And the recycling litter, recycling its offal from the processing plant, using litter, composting the litter, feeding it to cattle or using it for fertilizer, even pelleting it that you can go to these big box stores and buy it. So, I mean, to become sustainable, it's more than profit. It's also has to do with the environment. In addition to that, there's animal welfare. The consumer wants to know how the birds are being treated. And the broiler industry has come up with what they call FLAWS. That's their acronym for feed, litter, air, water, and space. And that would be the minimum of welfare. And then they're talking about enrichment. So I'll talk about that in a later podcast. The other thing that's the industry has gone to becoming socially conscious. And that's the president administration, that's a little bit of, they're not too keen on that, but it has to be with inclusiveness. It has to, you know, hiring minorities, not just women, but people from different races, religions, immigrants. The industry needs to be inclusive. And it is becoming more inclusive. And the consumers are demanding inclusivity. And you can see the farmers, a lot of the farmers are immigrants. And they started, they learned what they did from Europe and brought it here. And so sustainability is certainly the buzzword. And it means different things to different people. But it's obviously more than just staying in business. And it's just certainly the vertical integration has kept it in business and all these other things. But we're going to have to continue to produce more birds with less, because there's only a certain amount of resources that are out there. But reducing the greenhouse gases and less resources to get the same birds is incredible.
So what do you think about other aspects of poultry? So we're raising more birds on the same space. We've got more houses on the same space than, you know, those original flocks of hundreds or thousands. And so how can you comment on how biosecurity has changed over time as we learn more as well?
Well, putting more birds in a smaller amount of environment and going to antibiotic free and reducing medications, biosecurity, which basically fairly similar, very simply is keep what's out and keep what's in. So you don't want infectious organisms to get in the house. And there's so many ways, there's so many sources of infectious organisms. You know, air, wild birds, feed, individuals, all these then can bring in infectious organisms. And now with the avian influenza is one of the biggest problems facing the industry worldwide. And now it's in dairy cows and people, and so it becomes a bigger problem. The virus has been killing wild free-flying birds and mammals and things like that. So we really have to do a better job of keeping things out. And in the past, I can remember 30, 40, 50 years ago when I first got into this, you could drive down the road and the poultry farm was right up to the street, and there was a sign there saying whatever company it was. And that would bring in people just going, I want to, you know, going on the farm saying, I want to buy some of your chickens. Well, that certainly is the way. All new farms now are a fair distance from the farm, and the only signage that goes out there is a gate and a fence that says no trespassing. And that's basically keeping people out. And so I've been to some of these farms where they actually have a mailbox that you pull out. If you're going in there, you have to sign in. And then you can, a farmer will allow you to come in. You in order to get onto a farm, really right now, you have to don all kinds of disposable boots, hair netting, the jumpsuit, and then disinfect your hands, disinfect anything's really going into the farm, which would be phones, belts, and things of that nature. Most of that takes place outside the house, but some farmers are now putting some sort of ante room. So you can go in and do those, and you can hang up your clothes and things like that. And then either the ante room could be attached to a house or somewhere away from that. And once you come out of the house, what they normally do is you put all that stuff into a bag, and the farmer usually will then dispose of it rather than taking it and moving it back on. But anybody going into the house obviously has to have that information or dealing with whatever. Outside, you know, you have to have houses which are far away from standing water, because standing water is going to bring in mammals, birds, insects. It's been shown recently that organic matter from feathers, from ducks and dander that have been infected with influenza has virus in it. So obviously, you know, if these houses are going to be tunnel ventilated, they have fans which are sucking that in from the organic matter in, which can get it in the house. And so I think you and I have talked about this before, filtration and scrubbers, and I'll talk about that again. And those things work, but they're expensive, and you're going to have more air movement. But other things like rodenticides in and out of houses, keeping wild birds out, no pets, totally enclosed. If you can have things like trees, mountains, shrubs, to have that to isolate further, and in the exhaust area, some people are putting up various types of shrubs to catch the organic matter when it comes out of the house. So, you could have houses that farms that have as much as 20 birdhouses and 20, 30, 40,000 in a house. You're talking about some farms could have a $2.5 million chickens. And of course, we know in layers, they can go up to 5 million. So obviously, biosecurity is extremely important, will be continuing to be important for the future. And we definitely have to go that way, because we, you know, the government now is still restricting influenza vaccination. So without biosecurity, we don't have another weapon.
Yeah. The toolbox is,
that's right.
You know, the first people that step foot in the building following all the protocols, and people paying attention to things that are seem simple, but actually could be quite impactful.
Yeah. And I think the integrator and the service people really need to sit down, and they do, they have a checklist for the farmers, because these farmers, you know, not that they're stupid. I mean, they might not have college degrees, but you can sit down with them and you can go over what needs to be done in the checklist. Of course, all this is going to be voluntary, but the farmer knows what needs to be done in order to keep. They've seen influenza, and they watch the television. They know what's going on. So they pretty much will abide what the integrator says as far as integration is concerned. Like no chickens in the, you know, around roosting around houses. You can't have any backyard chickens. You don't even want anybody around you that has backyard chickens. And educating not only the workers, but the students, people around there. Education is the key.
Yeah, it definitely sounds like it.
It's time for our famous three.
We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible.
Beringer Ingelheim. Health experts bring industry-leading knowledge and expertise to today's poultry producers to help them solve challenging health issues through smart, science-driven decision-making using the best resources available. Probiotech International. Creating the next generation of feed and water additives to improve animal nutrition, health, and well-being. Innovation is in our nature. Visit probiotech.com/EN for more information.
Evonik, we are sciencing the global food challenge. Adiseo provides nutritional solutions and services to help producers achieve their targets in a high-quality, safe, and sustainable way. Making life easier for animals and those who care for them is the mission of Jeffo. Evonik Animal Nutrition is committed to ensure food security and safety while reducing the ecological footprint of animal farming. Its products and services use evidence-based solutions that seek to promote animal welfare and reduce reliance on natural resources. All this is underpinned by long-standing industry partnerships and deep customer understanding. Evonik's focus on efficiency, sustainable, healthy nutrition, and collaborations with livestock farming partners creates value for customers and consumers.
Well, is there anything else that you wanted to mention today to either highlight or that we did not cover before we wrap up our chat?
A lot of people ask me about books. Well, books may be okay for teaching students about the basic anatomy and physiology, but the industry is expanding so quickly that books really, they come out after a year, they're almost outdated. So there are very few books out there that you can read.
Yeah.
So what I look at it is trade journals. And you can get trade journals. You can get the hard copy or you can go online. The hard copy usually comes once a month, may or may not come with a fee. Online is you can get the online. I get online information from various publicators daily. Mm-hmm. And so I'm going to name a few of them here. And there are a lot, and it's hard to keep up with all them. But Watt Poultry has so many different ones. WattAgnet.com. You've got World Poultry. There's another one called Poultry Site. Another one called Poultry Report. There's another one called Poultry Times. There's another one called Egg News. And then you have things like the IPE shows that people, their industry shows, their scientific shows, their podcasts, like we were talking here. So there's incredible amounts of information. You need that because the industry is changing weekly, monthly, yearly. What I learned 40, 50 years ago in school, maybe the basics has changed so much, and it's you have to keep up with it. And it, so I have these sites popped up on my email all the time. And you don't have to read every one, but there's certain things in there that I really key on. It obviously anything that has to do with animal health, but other things as well. And you can really get an education. And see, the nice thing about it is farmers can get this, and so they can stay up.
Yeah.
You know, and you've got the so much information that can come not only from these sites, but from individuals that pharmaceutical companies and things like that. A lot of companies that maybe just be selling things or whatever have information. They have their own websites. Basic breeders have their own websites. You can actually download feeding guides, nutritional guides, management guides from the poultry the integrator or actually the basic breeder.
Yeah, those are the great suggestions because the books are outdated. Totally
yeah. They've been written by old guys like myself. I haven't been on a farm in a while.
No, that's all right. I'm going to ask you one more question before we wrap up, but what has been your favorite change or, you know, something that you thought was like the biggest change? You know, I'm sure you've seen many, but there's got to be something that stands out.
Well, as a poultry health specialist, I think for me, and my training is usually in molecular virology. So I was involved with the development and testing of these new molecular vaccines. Mm. And those things have just changed the way we vaccinate chickens and putting it in ovo now. We used to have to, I went into hatcheries years ago where they had to have 10, 15 people actually injecting with a syringe. And they could do maybe 1,500 in an hour. They were getting paid for that. Now you've got the in ovo machine that can do 45,000 in an hour with just one person,
yeah.
Basically robotics. And we have the core spray machine. There's spray machines that can be used out in on farms. For me in diagnostics, I've always liked diagnostics, things like the PCR, RFLPs with PCR sequencing, And it's really important with closely related viruses like influenza, laryngotracheitis, and a lot of these where there's serotypes variation. You need to pick these things up. You can actually sequence a virus into, without ever putting it into a bird, you can actually know where it's pathogenic or not. So those kind of things are really incredible to find.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, obviously people that are in nutrition, geneticists, they will tell you their own. I like the geneticists. They're moving into the molecular area now with CRISPR and a lot of these different things. I mean, the whole area has changed. I mean, for me, being a molecular virologist, you know, that's what I like. That's what I understand. I don't know all these things about genetics, nutrition, but it's all important. And it comes from where your background is, what you're interested in.
Yeah, well, that I think those are all really, really neat. So thank you so much for talking with me today. And thank you to the listeners who tuned in. And like and follow our show so you can hear more great information and timely news about the poultry industry. Thank you.
Thank you as well. I enjoy it.
Do you feel overwhelmed with mundane tasks that eat up your valuable time? It's time to reclaim your schedule and focus on what truly matters. Get your time back with elite remote talent without the time zone hassle. Delegate $10 an hour tasks to focus on your $1,000 an hour tasks. Schedule your free strategy call at wisevas.io.